Information Industry Association, IIA. Ron Dunn is now the director of that Information for Industry, IIA. They offered for ASIS to join them, to take over ASIS, and I was opposed to that.
Why was that?
Well, they were strictly set up originally under Paul Zerkowski, who was a lawyer, to do lobbying work, and I didn't feel as though our lawyer didn't think we should be doing lobbying work in government.
Now, my understanding is Herb White was one of the, he was both an SLA president and an ASIS president, that he was one of the big folks to try and talk the ASIS board into merging. Do you remember those discussions?
Well, sure. Yes, Herb was my predecessor there, and he was pushing that. He was actively involved in that. Uh-huh. Herb was good. Herb was very good.
Yeah.
Is he still alive?
Yep. He just retired about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And is living in Arizona now.
Oh, is he? Herb was, his attitude and his capabilities were always very good. I found Herb, I learned from Herb a lot.
Back to the librarians. What Irene Farkas Khan says in her history of ADI is that librarians were strongly resistant to automation. Is that correct? One of the central things when you say they were, I don't know if you use the term backwards, but anyway.
Well, traditional.
Yeah, traditional.
Librarian. Very few of the librarians in the early years wanted to change their ways. There were a few good ones. But MIT, they had a good one. Luck. There were a few good
librarians.
Herman Fussler at one of the library schools, Fussler, he was a good one. And they wanted to change and automate to help.
Well, what about Shira and Perry and Kent and those folks who went to the, they were basically, that center was at Case Western Reserve Library School.
I think that was the purpose, sure, of course. They had a hard time getting the chairman of the School of Library Science to change. Jesse Shira was not in favor of it. He was an old traditionalist librarian.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't want to change. Even so, the American Society of Metals supported Kent Perry and Barry. It took a long time for Case to change their School of Library Science. Very few schools.
Well, Shira saw himself as a bridge between the two fields. And
don't think he was, really.
Don't
Shira,
think so.
Jesse would argue and debate and get up very good on his feet in format, in lectures, and debate. Boy, he was strong in the library. I don't think he really acted in that function as a bridge between.
Well, yeah, Shira saw information science or documentation as an outgrowth of librarianship, and I think that the ASIS folks, the information science people, didn't want to view it that way.
I think you're right. I think Jesse did see it that way. No, we learned a branch in the library sciences per se as such. Information is a different ball game than document delivery, or it was a totally different concept from the information scientist's point of view. He had to be able to do the intelligent work to pick up the information needed by our company. No, I don't think it was.
So you didn't like that phrase that went around at the time that information science or was librarianship done by amateurs?
No, I don't. I never did agree with that or like it. No, you're right. None of us in the field that were more advanced thinking and visionary in that respect. But librarians teed me off. I had one here, Jim Wood. I hired him out of Cincinnati in 1952. He had gone to Case Western Reserve, was an excellent librarian. And I was glad to get James Wood. He got his master's in library science. But And they were collecting pretty good salaries, librarians. They were good. They were sought after. There weren't many good ones, but we did. I think that they never trained library scientists that, or librarians to think in terms of changing to get information to the people who needed. They wanted to control books. Mm.
Well, you were both on the Case Western Reserve and the University of Pittsburgh, so you had a chance to see this.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see change in the attitude to librarians?
We got Pittsburgh to change particularly, but we saw it at Case Western Reserve, too. We forced the changes, and I say the advisory board did. We recommended strongly changing from library to information, or combining it, actually, at Pittsburgh to it right there then. Yeah.
Who were you arguing against there? Because Kent had been on the faculty for several years.
He wasn't really involved. Well, I shouldn't say that. Actually, Alan Kent, he was strong in his arguments and debates, and he was a promoter from way back. He didn't really do the academia work as such. He did the Metals Review work, and he and Perry and Kent were doing the research for Metals, American Metals Society. We weren't arguing with him so much. We really didn't argue with Jesse. No, Jesse probably... Now, he had to be convinced, so they probably convinced Jesse Sherrod to change the school from library to information, mm-hmm. to combine it both mm-hmm. in their curriculum.
Mm-hmm. At Pittsburgh, combining
no,
both.
At
Case Western also.
Case Western Reserve. Uh-huh. Now, we as advisory board were very emphatic because, forgetting his name, of the dean or chairman of the department at the time, we got him to change the name during our...
Harold Loncour?
No.
No, at Pittsburgh. Loncour was at Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, but that was Loncour. It changed the name of the school. It used to be just like a school of library science. But
yeah.
We added the name and information. So.
Back to ACES. ACES was always in financial difficulty in those years. And dependent upon contracts, and when the contracts didn't come, they seemed to be in trouble. They seem to be in better shape, because I looked at the financial statement the year you were president, and it looked like there was a nice surplus. What happened in between here?
Mal Bay succeeded me, and I followed, I think, Herb, but... very important question that you raised. Unfortunately, I was a party of the part that hurt ESIS. We had a treasurer, elected treasurer, who I depended on to provide the reports to the board about where the ASIS stood. Unfortunately, there was an accountant who was doing the books that hid a lot of invoices in his desk drawer. Never any problem invoice. He pushed in his desk drawer, and there was found, not under my administration, but next year under Mel Day, they found this desk drawer full of invoices that hadn't been paid, amounting to about $400,000. And here we had operated under my regime thinking we were in good financial shape, and we operated that way, and I was depending on our treasurer to give solid advice to the board and to the running of ASIS, but he hadn't been checking up on the accountant, manager of the accounting division, and we had to fire him. His name, Ed Josh Smith, was executive director.
Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't paid any attention either to this accountant. Josh was a promoter and public relations oriented. Did you ever talk to Josh Smith? He's in Washington. He has his own company now. Doing very well. One of the best black-run organizations in the country. He's always listed up. Maximum consultants or whatever. Maximum consultants. Josh Smith. He was a real character. But he hadn't paid any attention to the operations like he should have. And he didn't know either when we were working running ASIS that there had been this problem. It had developed over two or three years. And then it was discovered under Mel Day, my successor as president, that there was this problem. So how do you get out of indebtedness of $400,000? Overnight, you don't do it. We weren't generating that kind of revenue, and so they had to cut back pretty heavy, and we had to seek an outside commercial outfit to bid on the production of our journals. And we got them to pay for the journals. We sold them at what amount?
That's when you sold the Wiley?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that gave us revenue to get us in the black again, and it's been operating at that level pretty much since.
Mm-hmm.
No, we just had bad advice. This is what happens. If you get organizational people that aren't doing their job effectively, the question that you raise says one important thing that has always bothered me, because each of the presidents had a plan, a program, how to further the Federation or the society, and we stayed pretty stagnant in membership numbers, and we didn't find ways. People weren't being trained to be information scientists, and there weren't enough people joining ASIS, and so it was always, we couldn't actually, I think there are 1,400 members, is that all? 1,500. And we couldn't generate the membership large enough to grow like American Chemical Society to grow. And we tried different ways. They say they're now doing quite well because they've taken in more other information people, not only the library, and that's one of the reasons why they've gone the library route, but also other industry. There've been a lot of people from Dun & Bradstreet and other of the industries that not only publishers, but they've been expanding, but not the growth has not been that great.
Not growing as fast as SLA, for example.
Right.
Yeah. Based on what I see in the papers you wrote for the newsletter for ASIS when you were president, it looked like to me that information policy took central precedence in what you were interested in and the way in which you tried to push ASIS. Is that a good assessment?
Yes. I think that even was true in my award speech, merit of award speech. I should have said to you earlier regarding the question of getting along with the ACS Board of Directors to get done what we needed to do. And this is true also with the federal agencies under Bert Adkins' programs with NSF and the other agencies. There was a period of time in there which the federal government was going to do all these things. They had the money to do them, and they didn't think the scientists themselves knew how. As a matter of fact, down in Washington at the Academy of Science one year, the federal agencies made a statement in a meeting that the nonprofit organizations didn't have good business judgment and management. And I always disliked that
because I think there were some good, excellent managers of scientific organizations, information activities, better than there are some of the managers of federal agency organizations, or even commercial. I think we could compete with the commercial organizations. If I'd been in a commercial organization, this organization would have been able to make $500 million a year. But we were limited by the nonprofit policy of ACS. Really, you had to operate that way. The board insisted on it. But you could charge what the traffic bears if you wanted to. If you'd been a Garfield, that's the way Garfield beat us in some respects. He was able to commercialize by producing the thing that people wanted on their desk. And the commercial chemical products or papers rather than stuff that won't be used for 10 or 15 years from now. We're covering for the next decades and two here. The future of chemistry depends upon how well you get this covered. The research often takes 10 years or more to get out and being used. One of the Nobel Prize winners in Atlantic City, a black tie wearer backstage, told me he pulled out of his pocket. He'd been kept in his billfold. It was a 1928 paper, a nuclear paper that we'd covered in Chem Abstracts, and we called it a mathematical treatise. And he was very unhappy with me that we'd called it a mathematical treatise. It was one of the most Henry Eyring out at University of Utah. And he didn't like that. We didn't know what he was writing. None of our scientists knew what he was writing. So it was one of his most used principles of chemistry that 20 years, 30 years later, some people kind of put it to him, was regarding nuclear work, atomic work. And this is a kind of thing that you have to do for chemistry for the years down the pike. The half-life of information is said to be 15 years in the field of chemistry. Well, in math, it's longer than that. In biology, it's shorter than that, 5 years, the half-life of new scientific research. But you have to do it now for the future when it's going to be used by people doing research in the field. They can look back and find that work that's going to support their work. It snowballs. I'm not sure how we got off on this.
Well, just talking about national information policy.
Oh, yeah. I had to spend a third of my time or more here at Chemical Abstracts through the years to work with the board of directors of the American Chemical Society to get policy so that we could operate efficiently and change. Mm-hmm. You said earlier, yes, there were a lot of the board members. My God, down at the University of Texas, in Bryce Crawford at Minnesota University, and very good even, but they would argue with me not to change. Chemists traditionally are forward-looking, but they liked their information system the way they were trained when they were growing up in colleges, and they didn't want to change. Humans don't want to change very often or very much, very fast. Worked hard to get policy right here so we could change and operate. That was difficult.
But you seemed in say, your presidential speech, and to some extent in that merit award speech that you gave, to be really disappointed in the lack of interest, first on ACES's part, but also from the federal government's part, in terms of real concern about national information policy and developing a definite information policy at a national level.
Very, very good point. I'm glad you understood that. A lot of people didn't. But I have seen other governments, other countries, moving or developing national policies towards information so that they could compete in the world.
Why do you think we didn't get one? We still don't have a national information policy.
Have.
Why do you think that's the case?
I I've asked that question a number of times, and the people that were involved back then were saying we don't need one. That our checks and balance system allows the competitive world to work, to both the federal government working with industry to come out better over the long run rather than try to establish policy in the area. My point perhaps in that paper should have been that by setting national policy and goals, if we would have worked together to get the federal government agencies and the scientific societies and the commercial world to agree on where we wanted to go and then work towards to cooperate to get that done. This was what Japan was doing, and I saw that. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do that here in this country. Now, the people in the government didn't want to. They wanted to, all of the government agencies wanted to do their own thing. That's what they're being paid for. If you were a government employee, Defense Department, Atomic Energy, you would make decisions that's going to foster and feather your nest and your company, your organization, your salary, your power. And they didn't want policy. They really didn't. Each of the agencies was fighting among themselves. I remember Bill Knox, when he was there in the 60s late, tried to get them to work together. They wouldn't. He was charged to get them to work together by the science advisor. They wouldn't work together. And they didn't want to really work with us, but the Dr. Edkinson, tried to get him to work with us. His flaw. We would have had a national policy if it hadn't been for Burke, because the agencies in the president's office would have established that by edict, and they probably, we argued and debated many times with the federal government agencies, right?
Wait, Edkinson was opposed to a definite national information policy?
He was opposed for the federal government taking over agencies doing the work for the scientific societies. And he fought that all through his years, and if he hadn't been there to fight that, we went to the treaty room at the White House. I don't know if you guys have ever been in the treaty room in the White House, but we stood up. Byron Riegel and I and Bob Karen stood up to the federal agencies. There was a General Ely that wanted defense to do all this for, they said at the ACS meeting in Los Angeles, they had an all-day symposium about how they were going to take over all the chemical information activities, and we had to fight them off in the treaty room at the White House. Fortunately, we had Don Horning there as president science advisor that understood this, and so it was a policy problem. We had ACS, within ACS, we had trouble to get the ACS to work, as I said, even contracts and grants with the government, but we had to get ACS policy established right so that we could change, but also we had to get ACS policy to work with the federal government to achieve what it was we needed to do to build the system. I had told the board of directors in the Award of Merit speech in Denver a few years ago that the government will take over all the information services. It's only a matter of time. You may not agree with this, but once you go down this route of computer-based systems and the internet coming on so hard, a communication system that's going to change our whole way of doing business. And is in other countries, Germany, France, Japan, Russia. You'll have government taking over because scientific societies. And this will be a sad day that the government will operate and have policy that is going to dictate what's being done to compete in the world.
And what do you see happening in this direction? The internet, you think, is one move
one
toward that?
One move towards nationalization of policy in America. Hmm.
Interesting.
Control.
When you look down 50 years in the future, 100 years, it's going to be a totally different ballgame with the new communication and computer system.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I guess
it's snowballing on us pretty hard, and it's only a matter of when they develop that need to manage effectively, and what can the societies do to overcome it to stop it. And I'm not sure. Well, I think we are better off up to this date having societies do the things that the chemists need to do, be doing. They know what their needs and wants are for information, but I think the governments are going to take over information programs.
Be interesting to be around and see if that happens.
Told that question?
Yeah.